This is Matt Verboys from La La Land Records, and you've entered the La La Land Lounge on Geekcast Radio.
Hello and welcome to Geekcast Radio here inside the La La Land Lounge. I'm, of course, TFG1 Mike, and this is the second interview that we're going to have over the last two or three years with La La Land Records, Matt Verboys. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
And MV Gerhard. Hello, MV. How are you?
Howdy. How you doing?
I'm doing well, doing well. So the first time I talked to you guys, we got kind of the whole history lesson of La La Land and what you guys do and covering all that kind of stuff. And we're a little bit late in this interview, seeing as how San Diego Comic-Con was a couple months ago. But New York Comic-Con is this weekend, so I figured, oh, hey, why not go ahead and get this done now? You guys have been firing on all cylinders pretty much since the last time I talked to you guys. I mean, 2014, 15, and even this year, you guys have put out some major stuff.
Thank you. You never sleep.
Sleep is overrated. You'll sleep when you're dead. That's usually what most people say. All right, so SDCC 2016, you guys went to the convention. What was that experience for each of you? Michael, you can go first.
Crazy. You know, we had a different location this time around, and it was right across from the WB and right behind AMC. And when they would bring out the cast members to Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, it would be a sea of people that would just be crowding around our table, which was good sometimes and not so good other times. But we had a wonderful experience and got to meet a lot of fantastic people. And
only at Comic-Con can you see people looking through your CDs and you start chatting and you realize, oh, that's Peyton Reed, the guy who directed Ant-Man, and he's checking out our soundtracks, you know. And so it's always fun to see, you know, fans who know of us and are excited to see us there, fans who become fans because they didn't know we existed and they find us there, and then some of the, you know, industry professionals too and stuff. It's just a really cool environment where all those kind of things intermingle. So
right.
It's fun. It's crazy and it's a lot of work, but it's fun.
Now, because you guys were there to work and to promote all of the Comic-Con exclusives like Supergirl Season 1, Flash Season 2, The Killing Joke, The Star Trek, and Wonder Woman Records, Justice League, BTAS Volume 4, did you guys have any time at all to actually just stand back and breathe and just take in what the overall convention is?
When we got there in the morning.
That's about it. It was like 45 minutes in the morning before everything goes crazy. And, it gets that, you know, it's Michael and I, we have people that help us, but we don't have a large staff, so it's not like, you know, we can just leave and not be around the booth, you know. So, you know, plus we want to be there to talk to people and answer questions and whatnot. So, you know.
So
you're standing around either way, right? Whether you're a fan or working the, you know.
Yep.
So
we should strap one of those pedometers and see how many steps we actually take. you do a lot of walking in a place like that.
Yep.
Oh yeah. It's just as bad as Disney World or Disneyland. Yep. You walk everywhere you go.
Yeah. The other thing too is we had some composer signings and we had to be there for those.
Right.
So, the Dynamic Music Partners were down, and Blake Neely came, and so it was cool.
Yeah. So at San Diego this year, you guys had Supergirl, as I said, Flash, Killing Joke, Star Trek, Wonder Woman, Justice League, BTAS, Volume 4. What were your all... When bringing these to the convention, did you guys have any idea of which ones would go first? Like completely gone, or did you have a set way throughout the weekend that you had various quantities for sale?
I think we knew, you know, sales never quite reach what you project they're going to be, but, you know, you make sure you have enough on hand just in case, because you are doing, you know, we do quite a bit. I think in comparison to maybe some of the other indie labels, you know, we do a little more promotion, make a little more awareness that we're doing these things and that we're going to be down there. I think we thought Wonder Woman would do really well, and of the ones we did, I think that did the best. But you know, it's superhero, man. It's the place to be for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you had those releases at Comic-Con. What were the fans' reaction coming up to the booth and seeing which ones they were gonna like? Which ones did the fans gravitate towards more first? To was it the CW stuff? Was it the DC animated stuff, or was it the records? Was it something that, because you have various, you know, some people are into Star Trek, some people aren't into superheroes and that kind of thing. What was the landscape of how the booth sales went as far, not the sales numbers specifically, but just how many various people came up and grabbed either all of them, one of them, or whatever?
Quite a few came up and grabbed them all. They were very excited. You know, my fondest memory has to be this 10-year-old kid with his dad, and he was so excited that the Flash music was available. And then he saw that we actually did season one the year before, and just was, you know, over the moon, because he loves the music from the show so much. And then when we told him that Blake and his crew were going to be there signing, it was just like, it was like Christmas in July for the kid.
Absolutely.
You know, it was very cool to, you know, see reactions, whether from, you know, a 10-year-old boy or a 7-year-old woman who was picking up the Star Trek vinyl for herself because she's such a huge fan of the series. So it was...
I remember the it's like it's all across the board, because the superhero, display of all the superhero covers will catch, you know, Comic-Con fans' attention, but then they'll realize that there's other stuff on the table too. And I remember, like, this really big guy, really big dude, and, like, he stopped in his tracks, and he saw the Commando CD, and he was like, does this have the Power Station song on it? And he grabbed it and turned it around and saw that it was there, and he, like, squealed, you know? He was so happy. So,
that's
know.
Awesome.
But to answer what you were saying before, I did kind of notice, like, the CW people, like, if someone was interested in a Blake score, they were interested sort of like in all the Blake Neely stuff. Mm. And then, you know, and then the Batman animated, you know, your core WB animation fans, or, you know, they know all about Michael and Lolita and Chris. And,
yep.
You know, they were kind of all over that stuff. So,
and it certainly helps when you have the composers down there, you know, meeting the fans and signing for them. That certainly brings out the lines, which is nice.
Yeah, and it makes it easy to say, like, oh, hey, you know, they're going to be here tomorrow signing it, you know.
That's right, that's true.
So you're competing with everything from Hall H to, like Michael said, the Walking Dead, the cast of Walking Dead behind you. And so it's very easy for people to go, oh, that's cool, and then they lose their attention and you don't see them again. So it's nice to give them a reason maybe to come back.
There's a lot of shiny things there at Comic-Con. You know,
oh yeah.
Whether it be, like Matt said, the cast of Walking Dead, or a really good-looking Poison Ivy walking past them.
You know, they
definitely get distracted. So sometimes it's hard to grab their attention. But those that were, in the know, so to speak, and saw, our advertisements and saw our ad in the fly, in the booklet, they were, they knew exactly what they wanted, and they came there and like, oh, Wonder Woman, I've been dying to get this, since I was a kid. And, there were a lot of excited adults there, that's for sure.
When the Justice League score came out, I was like, oh, finally, it's about time. And then I looked at it further, and I'm like, wait, it's not all the episodes. What did they do? It was just my initial fan reaction, because I think they're out of the first two seasons of Justice League, there's like three cartoon episodes missing off of it. I know in Blackest Night is one of them, and I was like, wait, why isn't that on there? That was weird.
You know, they only put so much on there. I mean, wanted to stick to a four to set, make it reasonably priced for the fans.
That's the other thing too, is when you're pushing, like, is that one $50 or 60?
That one's 60.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're pushing $60, it's like, well, you kind of run into, it's like the more you add, the more it's going to be, for everybody, for us and for the customer. So it's like, can't do everything. The hope is you do it, and if it performs, like, you know, like the Batmans have, or some of the other ones, then the hope is you can keep it going.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Speaking of Batman, I assume the plans are to go into new adventures now that the full first 65 are done. Or not, not new adventures, adventures of Batman and Robin.
Adventures of, yeah, and then the new adventures.
Yeah.
Wrap it up. You know, we're looking at probably, I think, 3 discs for Adventures of, and then 2 discs for New Adventures. I think that actually would be everything, if I'm not mistaken, for those two short-lived series. And then you know, the Bat would be done, and you know, we would love to you know, further our adventures and do Batman Beyond and Justice League Unlimited and possibly even, you know, Teen Titans and maybe even Legion of Heroes, which was a short-lived cartoon that that all three of the Dynamic Music Partners scored.
Absolutely, yeah. That Bat Beyond disc really does need a redo. I mean, the original score that they did for that way back when in 99, it's a good score, but we need a La La Land version of Batman Beyond for the music for that one.
Something to be heard.
Yes.
Very many times.
All right, so I know...
Paul, I think one of our first meetings with them, I recall getting, I think they gave both you and I'm sure you already had it, but I remember it because I didn't have it, but they gave me that, you know, Batman Beyond.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole thing was, hey, when are we going to do this?
When are we going to do this? That was about a decade ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago. But,
yeah, because the original TV soundtrack only has 20 tracks on it, and then they released the Return of the Joker film stuff. And those are pretty much the only
two. Both of which are long out of print. So.
Yes, they are.
There's certainly time to revisit.
I think it's been about 10 years since I found those on eBay. I actually found those on eBay in 2006, but yeah, it's been a while. All right, so one of the other big things you guys had this year to celebrate its 30th anniversary almost, La La Land's Day Off.
Yeah.
So we finally have saved Ferris.
We haven't had a day off since.
Well, you guys don't take days off. I mean, that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, especially after this release. I mean, it's been doing very well for us, and you know, has continued to keep the lights on, so to speak.
Absolutely. Well, again, it's another one of those scores that kind of like way back when, I think it was 2013 that you guys put out. Yeah, it was 2013. Days of Thunder. I mean, Days of Thunder had never had a score for 23 years. You know, it's one of the main reasons why, you know, people ask me about soundtracks or whatever else. I'm like, look, go to lalalandrecords.com because they're just simply the premier.
Police Academy didn't have a score for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah.
That's part of our legacy is you know, releasing things that we've been wanting for 30 years.
Absolutely.
If you want
too
to
bad
do,
has
because like if it you, doesn't if it doesn't get done, you know,
yeah.
Like what's going to happen? Or, you know, you worry, like, are they still going to have the music elements, or are they still,
right.
You know, so it's, you know, their record. These are, you know, fine composers that generated fine work. Work that we grew up with, but also stands the test of time, and, you know, and it's not just us, it's the other labels doing it too, you know, so Michael describes it as kind of a golden age of, you know, it's like, this is it. If you're a score fan, this is the time to be collecting, because there's so much good stuff coming out. I mean, you know, whether it's Ferris Bueller or Ten Commandments or Jaws or whatever.
A complete RoboCop 3, for God's sake.
So there you go.
Yeah, with Ferris, you know, I saw after a while about, you know, people online saying, oh, but what happened here? What happened there? And I remember Matt told me off air that it's basically a licensing thing. And this is what I don't get about certain people that were in the movie or whatever for music is, if it's a 30th anniversary release, you'd think that they'd want to get more exposure for what they had in that. I just don't. specifically the English Beat song, the one where Ferris is running home and it's not there. And I'm like, I just don't get licensors.
Well, here's the issue. This was not a reissue. So when you do a reissue, like if you did, I don't know, what's an example of one that we did that had...
Caddyshack.
Caddyshack, perfect example. Or if you're doing something that already had an existing soundtrack that you have to make a deal with the original music company that did that soundtrack, a record label, part of the deal is that usually, sometimes it's different, you have to make, you know, outside arrangements, but usually you're carrying over those songs because you're still sort of just doing the original soundtrack, even though we're adding score elements.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered a reissue of an existing soundtrack from the label that has the rights to do that soundtrack. So the songs that, like Lethal Weapon, we were able to carry over a lot of the, you know, some of them, other ones that weren't there, we had to license. In the case of Ferris, every song had to be individually licensed. So it's a big project. And you walk into something like that knowing you probably aren't going to get everything. I mean, we would have loved to have had March of the Swivel Heads, but it's like, at the same token, if we didn't have the Dream Academy instrumental piece when they're in the museum, then we'd be getting people saying, oh, how come you don't have, you know, the instrumental piece in the museum?
Basically, it's like this, Mike. Forget it, Mike. It's Hollywood.
Yeah, that's...
Artists,
but again,
it's
one of those things where, you know, you guys go to the licensors or whoever has the rights to whatever it is, and you say, okay, we're going to do this because we're wanting to celebrate 30 years since it happened, and this is the first time it's ever happened. You would think that that person would be like, yes, I would love to let you do that. And that's what I don't understand is, regardless if it's Hollywood or not.
It gets so complicated that let's reverse it, and let's say that the artist didn't have a problem with it, but maybe their label would or did, or who knows. So there's any kind of problem that can stand in the way of getting the track. I think the good news is, at the very least, the ones that we didn't get, you can get elsewhere. The ones that were rare and are still sort of difficult to get or you couldn't get before, we were lucky enough to get those. And then
Absolutely.
Irish Four, which nobody, I mean, it's been bootlegged, but nobody's had a great sounding, you know.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think his score's even been bootlegged, really.
A bunch of it is. A bunch of it's on the one CD I have. Not as much as we have, but there's a bunch of it on there. But it doesn't sound good at all, and it uses wrong takes, and like, for instance, like Star Wars on the bootlegs is like John Williams' Star Wars ripped from the soundtrack of Star Wars and not the recording they actually did for the movie, which is what we have. We have Ira Newborn's orchestration that they recorded for the movie. So, you know, a lot of stuff on the bootlegs weren't a true representation of what was in the movie, but that's because everybody was scrambling to do their own Ferris soundtrack.
Right.
There was none, you know?
Yeah, that's true. All right, we talked about him before. We got to talk about him again, the legend that is Blake Neely, because this guy has been doing amazing things with the CWTV stuff. He started out with Arrow, and currently, you guys can tell me the actual date, but I saw the image the other day that Season 4 score is coming out later this month.
October 11th, Tuesday.
There you go. But, you know, he had Arrow's Season 1 through 3, Flash Season 1 and 2, Supergirl, Legends. And again, you know, I'd like to get your all's feelings on this. When I got the copies of Flash and Supergirl, one of the things you guys do more than most other music companies in general these days is you will put a lot into the liner notes, and depending on the release, obviously. And in most, if not all, of the Blake Neely scores, he has a little note in the liner notes to the fans or whatever else saying thank you or giving some sort of behind the scenes of how they assembled it or whatever else. In Flash, he says something along, it's over on my shelf, I'm not going to go get it. He says something along the lines of, we did 14 different hours of, or 23 different hours of Flash, and basically telling the fans that, hey, this is what I think you guys are going to want to hear the most, instead of putting out, you know, those 23 hours of music on a one or two disc set. And I remember seeing on a lot of your all's, on one of the Facebook things on your all's page was like, oh my God, you mean it's not the whole thing? Why are we even? And I'm just like, it's a best of. Get it to. It's just one of those things where some fans I just don't get.
Well, also, if they're young, they don't like. They have no, I guess, no reference to what soundtrack albums like usually are. Maybe in some way we've ruined that.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, some of our historical releases. I mean, yeah. We do try to do the complete scores, but you know, when you're dealing with a television show, particularly. You know, one that has a score written for every single episode, you can't put out 23 hours worth of material. And you don't even want to listen to 23 hours worth of material.
Yeah. Certainly physically it's a challenge. I mean, I guess if somebody wanted to digitally put up everything they could, but...
Yeah.
But even when we were working with Bear McCreary when we were doing the Battlestar Galactica stuff way back in the day,
yeah.
I mean, you know, the idea was to assemble the best album that you can possibly assemble with the best cues and the most requested cues from that season.
That's right. You talk about successful albums. Those were huge records for us.
Back in the day. Blake really, you know, put a lot of thought into, this batch of albums and created a truly fantastic listen from beginning to end. In particular, my favorite this year would have been Supergirl. What a great listen.
I have to say, too, you know, I'm a casual fan of these things, but MV, you know, really knows these shows. I'm the kind of person that's like, there's something playing in the office, and I'm like, man, this is really good. What is this? So it's like, you know, just sight unseen, you know, Blake really brings, and Supergirl is the one that, you know, pops in my head, too, is playing here in the office when we first got, you know, the music from him. And like, man, this, you know, you could score anything with this. This is really, really heartfelt. It's not the orchestration and the assembly of the music is not, you know, pedestrian really in any way. It's just really good music. He's a real talent.
And he is.
I think obvious.
And
a great guy, too, so.
The one question I had about the Supergirl release was, and I actually asked him this on Twitter. I asked Blake Neely this on Twitter. I'm like, on the release, it has the main theme as the last track. And I'm like, can I put it as the first track in my playlist? Because it makes, I'm like, wait, why is it the final track? What happened with the arrangement on the disc for that? Because the main theme is the last track on there.
Yeah, that's something we wanted to do, and I think it's because it's mostly a lot of it's pilot, right?
It really brings the whole album together the end, and it's a great way to actually end the album. You know, oftentimes, you know, a composer will design an album in a way that like maybe the first four or five tracks really grab you and they're great, and then it kind of like peters out as it goes along, and then by the time you're at the end of the track, you're just like, oh, it's over. But like at least now you got something to look forward to, and it really kind of sums up her journey as well as Blake's journey, you know, for that entire season. And if you look at it that way, it's sort of like, you know, once it's over, it kind of leaves it with a smile on your face. And whistling that fantastic tune.
That's true. I guess I'm just so used to hearing the main theme and then the end theme to kind of like encapsulate the whole thing.
Yeah, and I mean, if you listen to season two of Flash, you know, he didn't start the album with the theme at all. So it's, you know, like I said, he was kind of, his goal was to deliver a musical journey of that season. You know, whether it be Flash or Arrow, which really is some fantastic work in season four. And then, you know, Legends of Tomorrow I thought was just a lot of fun. Certainly my favorite was the Western episode, how he incorporated the theme into a Western motif.
And then you throw on Blind Spot, and it's like it couldn't be more different but on its own terms, in its own electronic genre, really good. You know?
Yeah, I haven't gotten the Blind Spot score yet, but when I do, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to go on Hulu and watch, because I heard of Blind Spot, I saw the pilot, but I never actually kept up with it, and now that it's kind of over, the first season, I guess, is kind of over, Hulu got the rights from NBC to put the whole season on, so once I get the score, I think I've told you guys this before, is I have to see the music in context. So,
right.
Like, when I talked to Joe Kramer, when we talked about Rogue Nation, I actually saw the movie twice, and then I listened to the score outside of it so I can kind of, you know, get my mind into the music itself. So, yeah, with Blind Spot, that was something that was on my radar, but I just never kept up with it. Now I can go back and kind of approach it with fresh eyes. So we're coming up to the end of the year. You guys have had a lot of stuff come out this year. Usually every year you guys almost one up the year before with releases. So can you tease anything that's coming out this Christmas season?
Well, some people sort of already are like aware of, in particular.
Yeah, we've given hints. I mean, we've said that we have a 3-disc set of. The original Wonder Woman TV series coming out, hopefully going to get out by Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, we're always afraid to say yes. This is what's happening,
right.
Because we're never 100% sure. There's some Star Trek 50th anniversary related material that we've been speaking about,
and we have, you know, I'll say this for the end of the year, we have, I guess you can say, a bad case of sequelitis. We're going to make a lot of fans very, very happy. And we'll just leave it at that.
Was it just a joke?
I wanted to hear specifics.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, you can't give specifics, but as far as whether
we enjoy kind of announcing those things, you know, right after Thanksgiving, and I think people get excited about it too. And,
absolutely.
Those that have paid attention throughout the year will, you know, gather sort of clues but we're excited about what's coming up.
Yeah. So are you guys? I saw several teases on Facebook of potentially La La Land being upside down next to a MiG. Is that possible?
I hope so. It'd be great. You know, it's certainly a great project. It would be, we've loved working with Harold in the past, like when we did Tango and Cash, and Mr. Cruz has been wonderful to work with. We've worked with him on several projects, Days of Thunder, you know, Mission Impossible, The Firm, he's been fantastic to work with. So, you know, we certainly have, we have that relationship, you know, well intact. And of course with Paramount and Sony Music, who have soundtrack rights. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't rule it out. It's definitely on our wish list. But we can neither confirm nor deny.
We're not going to write checks our bodies can't cash.
That's right.
That's right. What was the other one? That would be awesome if we could get that and... if we could get Axel.
Oh, Beverly Hills Cop? Yeah.
Work with Harold.
That would be a dream.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That would certainly, fit right in with what we do.
Yep.
And, you know, you just, you never know what's going to happen.
Yep, that's true. All right, why don't you give the listeners what's coming up in October? We mentioned that Arrow Season 4 is coming out on the 11th. What else do you guys got going on for October?
Well, on the 11th, we have Arrow 4 from Blake Neely, as you're saying. We have Mike, it's Higgum, I don't know how you pronounce it. Is it Higgum or Higgum?
I think it's Higgum.
Higgum. And Matthew Margeson's wonderful... Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children score, which is the number one movie out right now. And geez, what's her other October 11th?
Oh,
geez, for crying out loud.
Johnny Quest. Johnny Quest, 2-disc set, over 2.5 hours of music to the classic Hanna-Barbera TV show, finally making its world premiere debut on October 11th. So we're really excited by that. And then later in the month, we release Volume 3 of Mark Snow's Immortal X-Files music.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Which incorporates a lot of requests that fans have been wanting throughout the years with our series of X-Files music. So, and that'll be out on the 25th, and that's a 4-disc set.
Awesome, awesome.
A little something for everybody.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised there wasn't any Halloween-themed releases this month.
Well, you know, it's we try to work it within our schedule to do stuff like that, and then
completely
stuff happens, you know, so... It doesn't seem to work out, and then, you know, January will roll around, and boom, we'll have out, you know, something that should have come out in October. But, hey, you know what? It's great music, and you know, folks, you know, we'll buy it anyways. I mean, when we did Friday the 13th, we unleashed that in January of that year, and that sold out within, 10 hours, something like that? So
it's a good October, though. It's like, you know, we got some fresh new TV with Blake stuff. We got classic TV with Mark Snow stuff. We got, you know, a really wonderful score to a you know, really cool Tim Burton movie. And, you know, and then we go all the way back to the early 60s for, you know, some TV animation music that's like, you listen to that stuff. Anybody that's into jazz, it's like, man, just like actual, like, great music. It's just a great listen. So, yeah.
At this point, I'm just waiting for She-Ra. The only reason why I even say that is because the last year or so, my buddy Optimus Soul and I, next year will be 5 years, we've got a podcast called the Powers of Grayskull series, and we've spent the last 5 years going through every single episode of all four of the Masters cartoons. So Filmation, He-Man, and She-Ra. Next year we'll get to new adventures, and then the 2000 X cartoon. So when the He-Man series came, when the He-Man score came, I'm like, okay, great, this is awesome. Yes, I love listening to this music. Now when are we getting She-Ra? Because we need that too.
Well, we'll do what we can. We're trying. That's hard stuff to make happen because the existence of the material and everything else. So it's difficult, but. But we appreciate it.
All right. I'd like to thank Matt and Michael for taking the time to chat with me in this La La Land Lounge interview. You can check out lalalandrecords.com. They're on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. Later this month, you can catch their Arrow Season 4. You can catch the Johnny Quest release. The X-Files, right?
X-Files. And this Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Absolutely. Coming up next on La La Land Lounge, I'm actually going to be taking a look at Flash Season 2 and Supergirl Season 1, so that'll be an episode next year. I decided to do these next year because I want to go back and re-listen to them all, but you guys mentioned no one can really undertake multiple hours of music. Well, we're going to be tackling the 25th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series. I'm going to tackle all four volumes in 1 year.
Nice.
So that's what's going on with Matt and Michael. I'd like to thank you guys for taking the time to chat with me, and head on over to lalalandrecords.com, folks. That's where soundtracks live.
Hey, we appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.
You and I joined forces. Literally. We combine your speed with my speed. If you throw me forward at your fastest, then I might just break the dimensional barrier and get back home.
What do you mean, like a race?
Yeah, I guess. Think you can keep up, Girl of Steel?
Oh, just you watch, Scarlet Speedster.
All right.